you're all I've ever wanted and my arms are wide open, this like unrequited emotional intensity to someone that might not even know that he exists, that might not even know that he's out there just kind of spinning his wheels for this other person. And I wonder how often that happens. I wonder how often people are like pining for something that the other party doesn't even have any clue towards, you know?
Folks in the audience, we're getting a glimpse into Nicole's successes romantically in her life. She's wondering if people ever pine after somebody unrequitedly.
Like,
how often does that happen?
Hey, I'm Nicole.
And I'm Mark.
And this is Never Mind the Music. What are we talking about today, Mark?
Can we talk for a bit about London?
Sure.
After college, my wife and I, we went to Europe. You know, one of those things where you go and
people
you don't
do
have
it.
Any money and you spend an hour walking around for a restaurant, finding one that's like got something under 10 euros, but you end up giving up basically because there wasn't. One of those like where you waste your time trying not to be as broke as you actually are.
So cute.
And at one point we were in London. We were staying with my wife's cool cousin, Lisa, not my cool Aunt Lisa, the one who gave me the Green Day album.
Yes, she does sound very cool.
They're both cool. They probably would get along. They probably met at my wedding or something like that and conferred on their Lisa-ness or whatever. Anyways, we were staying in part of London. Incidentally, cool cousin Lisa's apartment was owned by one of the members of Bananarama.
Oh, I love
to say. Remember Bananarama?
I don't remember them at all, but I do like to say the name. I think it's a fun name to say.
They have like Cruel Summer and Venus, like those songs, right?
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I'm pretty sure I may have made that up because we were very deliriously low on sleep because we took a red eye to get there.
And so hungry because you were trying to be
That's
frugal.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Though that was worse by the time we got to Paris. Anyways, so we're half asleep walking around for a few days, various neighborhoods of London, trying to acclimate to the time change. And we keep hearing this song over and over again. And it culminates sometime crazy late at night because we're all like off kilter, probably 2 days later, maybe the third or fourth time we hear this thing. And it's the video pops up on, I think, the sort of UK equivalent of VH1, which might be VH1 or what? VH1 or something.
Maybe.
Is that how they say it?
H, yeah.
And anyways, you probably know where I'm going with this, but it's this song that had just been haunting us for like the three delirious days prior.
Hello, is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes.
It's a great overlay for a montage of you and your wife just walking around like lost and in the rain looking for a baguette or whatever.
No, like literally falling asleep on a park bench like for like an hour and waking up because it was summer. It was 90 degree heat and
you're
like sweaty,
weird.
like the worst kind of nap. Like, where am I? So my question for you, despite the stupid preamble there, are there any songs you associate not just with experiences or people, but locations? I associate Hello by Lionel Richie. Everybody, we're talking about Lionel Richie today, with London, which is not something we should be associating him with. It's not like, oh, it smells like Teen Spirit, Seattle. Just through this weird idiosyncratic experience I have.
Yes.
Do you have a story like
that? I do.
Do it.
And it's such a good example because they're so, you'd never make this connection. But I associate Rihanna's We Found Love with the Everglades in Florida.
We found love in a hopeless place.
Okay.
Because I used to, in a previous life, it feels like, recruit for an art and design department at a college I worked at. And I would travel around with a really, really great colleague and we would recruit students from all over. And one of our annual trips was driving from Miami to Sarasota. And we would make that drive after like an 8-hour day of recruiting with like no food, on little sleep, kind of road weary. And we'd always drive through the Everglades. And in 1 year, we heard that song every 4 minutes, it feels like. And we were so slap happy that every time we heard it, we just started like hysterical laughing because we thought we were both going crazy. And there was just nothing except Everglades and no place to stop for anything. And we just lost our minds to that song. And every time I hear it, I think of that moment. And it was such a fun time. It was such a fun experience, like doing that work. And my colleague was really great to work with. And we just had a blast every time. But every time I hear that song, I think to call her or text her or something. But we kind of lost touch.
It makes me think of alligators or marshland.
Yeah, it makes me think of just like being kind of like you, like kind of just out of your mind, delirious.
Where am I?
Like you woke up from a weird nap on a bench somewhere, except I'm like an alligator alley or something.
Wow. Okay.
So
not what I was expecting, but I'll take it. I like it. So, okay. Lionel Richie, what's your experience? If anything, where are you at with Lionel Richie?
I'm a fan of Lionel Richie. As we know, I'm a fan of most music. Whenever I think of him, I think of the headshot on this album. Him on this album cover.
Did you know he was in the Commodores before, right?
Yeah, like Easy Like Sunday Morning. Is that the Commodores?
The thing is, the song that like I would know that I associate with them is Brick House.
Oh,
but he
right.
does not sing on Brick House. Well, maybe he sings backup, but he was sax player in the Commodores. Oof. But yeah, the song Easy was a hit, 1977. Mm-hmm. One of the ones he wrote. I don't think he plays sax on this, but he kind of wrote the ballads and stuff for that band.
Cool.
That's why I'm easy. I'm easy like Sunday morning.
Do you ever hear the Faith No More cover of that song?
No.
It's really good.
Cool.
Mm-hmm. Not like in Mr. Bungle sort of way, but like in a
I bet it's very
sort of way.
Different.
It's actually... You know what? You think it would be, but it's really similar.
Patton can really sing when he wants to, you know?
And he shows it off
song. I feel like
it's
really
good. It actually feels the same as the Commodores version. Like, it doesn't have, like, a Faith No More vibe to it, which is really
intriguing. I gotta check it out again. It's been a while since I've listened to them. So we're talking about Hello, the third single from 1983's Can't Slow Down.
Hello, is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your smile.
It's creepy as a song.
Well, did you watch the music video?
No.
I would say it's creepy. He's, I think, like an acting teacher in a college. It could be community or something, but...
It could be.
He falls in love...
Oh.
Wait, what?
Like, it could be a community college? Like, how would you know?
No, I don't mean... I mean, sorry. Oh, my God, that sounded dumb. I'm not saying it... It could be a four-year school, but it could be a two-year, you know?
It's a junior college. Private.
No. I mean, like, it's either a community college... Or it's either a college or it's, like, a community class. Like
I get it.
Okay. Or just a... Whatever class, an acting class, you know, you go to acting school. But I think it's a college and he's in love with his student, which
rule number one
wasn't as creepy in the 1980s, but apparently is creepy to me as a college professor. And he's in love with his student and she's, as far as the video tells us, is blind. And then I don't know why that matters in the video, except that at the end, the like surprise is that in her sculpting class, she sculpted a bust of him.
All right.
Which is also creepy. So it's just...
Yeah, it's a
I'm
lot.
Not sure it works. I'm not sure it works.
You lost me even. The line, I can see it in your eyes. Like, if she's blind, she probably wears sunglasses or something. Or has, like... I don't know. There's something that doesn't land for me there.
I think this is a reinterpretation of the themes of the song.
Sure.
Not a literal
representation. It's like an allegory or something.
Maybe, yeah. But okay. I find the song not very creepy. I find the music video quite
creepy.
Once
you layer on the images
for
of
sure.
it.
Add it to the list of the stalker songs. What was the...
Right, like the police song.
What was... There was one we literally... The police song was just a reference. What was the stalkery...
So the Blondie song?
Oh, yeah, like...
One Way or Another.
Add it to the list of the stalker songs, like, not One Way or Another, but what was the Blondie song? Ex-Offender.
Right.
Right? Yeah, their first single. This one hit number one.
Nice.
You know the other number one hit on that album?
Tell me.
All Night Long.
Oh, that's a... Oh, is that a better song than this?
I think it's a better... So I tend to like the jams, the
yeah, I
upbeat
think,
tunes
yeah,
more.
Yeah, you do.
I don't have a clip of that one, but I can get it in.
I think it's once good. I see the music video for this, I'm going to like this song more because I like weird, you know, once we start layering weirdness into it, I get really interested.
We'll see what happens. Yeah, that's
like,
right.
How does she even sculpt him if she doesn't know what he looks like?
I think there's a hands on the face scene at some point in it.
That's great.
It's a little, yeah, I don't
this
know.
This is right up my alley. Yes.
Check it out. So yes. 5 singles on the top 10 on this album, but those two are the 2 number hits. This one, have you heard the term Quiet Storm?
No.
I think that applies to this, the sort of soulful ballads in the sort of rough R&B world, like Smokey Robinson, I think, was one of the pioneers of that style. This one was written by Lionel Richie. You know what else he wrote? Come on. Did you see The Greatest Night in Pop?
No,
we
I never
are the
saw
world,
that.
Right? You oh, never saw?
There's so much I don't know.
Okay, so watch The Greatest Night in Pop.
You've told me that before.
We talked about it last season. There's a nice deep dive, so to speak, on it on the One Hit Thunder podcast, friends of the show.
Love them.
Shout out to those guys. They're the ones who talked me in by listening to their podcast into actually watching it. But it's an awesome documentary about We Are the World. There comes a time when we heed a certain call, when the world must come together as one. There are people dying.
Cool.
And it really humanizes Lionel Richie. Like, if you think Lionel Richie's creepy because of this music video, though we can maybe blame the director or whatever, that he's kind of the sane person in the room through that whole process, right? Because, you know, Michael Jackson co-wrote it, but, you know, Lionel Richie was kind of told to herd the cats of all those, you know, 30 superstars or whatever in the room. Before we kind of get into the song for reals, can we do our plagiarism watch 2025? Edition for
yes.
Hello.
Yes.
Marjorie Hoffman White sued Lionel Richie in 1984 for plagiarism for her song, I'm Not Ready to Go. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
So would I. I could not find it. I look, listeners, if you know where we can find Marjorie Hoffman White, I'm Not Ready to Go, please send it to us. I couldn't find it. And so,
then
you
how
know
do
what that
we
means?
Know?
That means there's no plagiarism. The song doesn't exist. I don't know what happened. I think it was dropped or whatever. But
did they settle, like, out of court?
I don't know. I didn't.
Maybe they settled and he told her to scrub the internet.
Like, I found actual references in 1984 to, the suit was just opened up. And then
We can't find the song anywhere.
So
you should go to a record store. I bet you if there's a printed copy of it,
I don't think it ever got, did it ever get recorded?
If it was never recorded, then how could it be plagiarism? How would Lionel Richie have ever heard it?
It's a good question. But just because you haven't recorded it doesn't mean it doesn't exist.
Like she played at a bar that he heard at the bar.
Or whatever, or published, or who knows, right? I don't know. Maybe she was a pop star that's been forgotten. But
where was she from?
I don't know.
Did their paths ever intersect?
No, I mean it. Listeners, please find this information out and let me know, because I don't know.
2 in the morning tonight, I'm deep diving. I'm trying to figure this whole thing out.
Because anytime we normally, you know, when I'm looking up an artist, anytime I normally see, there's an accusation of plagiarism, we enter into a possible funny conversation we get to have about how laughably similar or laughably different the songs are. And in this case, I was foiled. This is the first time.
We were robbed of our opportunity for witty banter.
Yeah, they
and I don't like it.
So I wanted to talk about a certain type of chord progression. And I don't think so far in this season, we've done much chord stuff. It's all been like melody, rhythm, right? I don't know.
I don't think we have. And I love the chord talk.
Let's do some chord talk. So we are going to use something called the circle of fifths.
I know that.
You know what the circle of fifths is? Tell us.
It's in my brain somewhere. I learned it a million years ago, but it's like kind of like a map. It's kind of like a map for music.
So listeners, pause, Google it on your phone. Take a look. It's a circle.
It's like a literal chart.
It's literally a circle, a chart. And there's kind of 2 things that this means. The circle of fifths basically just means as you go up a fifth, which means 5 notes, you get a sharp in your key. If you go down a fifth, which means go down 5 notes, you get a flat or you lose a sharp, right? So when people are learning music or learning music theory, which is probably, you probably learned it in Mr. Joe Mulligan's house.
I did, great recall.
Mr. Joe Mulligan's class. Not his house.
That would be
you
a real...
homeschooling.
No, a real Lionel Richie vibe.
Oh boy, oh boy. All right, so you probably learned it in Joe Mulligan's class as a chart on the board that helped you learn your keys.
Yeah.
So like you could see the circle of fifths and go, oh, that means D major has two sharps and F major has one flat.
Yeah, it was definitely like a map for key signature.
That's right. So that's not what we're talking about here. What we're talking about is a chord progression that moves by fifths.
Okay.
It's doing the, it's playing that as if it's a musical thing. First, before we get there, let's see what the sort of chord setup of the rest of this song is before we get the circle of fifths sequence. Here's the beginning. What do you think?
I love, like, I know you're going to talk about the piano chords underneath, but I love that little like floating melody on
the
top
little
of
synth.
It.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And this was the thing I'm sure in London we would hear and be like, what? Like, it's that again? Right. But okay. So
hypnotic.
Listen to it again. And I want you to notice that putting aside the cute little synth line that you're noticing, the bass, like the left hand on the piano is moving, but the right hand is kind of just chilling. We're sort of stuck.
Yeah.
There isn't a lot of motion. It's static, I would say. And the voices of the top part of the piano, when we say voices in an instrument, we mean each individual note separately, doesn't really move. And it creates these really cool, pretty dissonant chords like ninths and major sevenths. Mm. But it's all about being stuck. Listen and follow how the bass moves, but the upper stuff doesn't move very much. Yeah.
Yeah.
Continues. He adds a melody, but it's, again, not really going anywhere because the melody just repeats.
It kind of feels like you're on a treadmill.
I've been alone with you inside my mind. And in my dreams, I've kissed your lips a thousand times.
But then something changes. Listen to what happens at the very end here. Of the pre-chorus.
Hello, is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes.
Sorry, I killed her, everybody. Oh my God.
You get so excited. It's really endearing, like how excited you get about a chord change, like a key change or whatever.
Well,
that
what
was.
I'm trying to do is make you excited.
I know.
What happened there at the end? I made a really outrageous face as the last chord arrived.
It like all of a sudden like lifted up to me, like it something broke open.
Yeah. So we have an A minor chord that this, we're in the key of A minor, turns into an A major chord.
Okay.
Almost like when the minor things turn major, when we were talking about Seal. Remember what it's called? Something third.
Ooh, checks. I'm checking the notes. Oh, I'm not going to get there in time. Just tell me. There's no time.
Captain of the USS Enterprise from TNG.
Picardy.
Picardy, yeah.
Yes.
So almost like a Picardy third, where you have a minor chord turning major. It's not actually quite what's happening, but it's something similar to that,
like a
right?
A tonic chord.
The tonic chord there changes into major instead of minor, which here it's doing something slightly different, but it's technically the same twist that's happening.
Cool.
Right? But what this does, the point is, this chord says we're moving. We're finally going somewhere. Right? Mm-hmm. So we hear that things are about to suddenly move, and this is what they do.
Hello. Is it me you're looking for? I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your smile.
It goes from almost like menacing and creepy. It like flips to being like romantic and nice.
Right. I mean, it's interesting because actually, you know what? Let's just listen to Gloria Gaynor.
All right.
I've got all my life to live. I've got all my love.
It's doing the same type of thing.
Well, describe what's happening. This, of course, I Will Survive. Change of topic, sort of, in the middle
kind
of my sentence.
I mean,
Gloria Gaynor, 1978. I'm going to play for you again. But what I want you to focus on is the bass. Now, the bass is, this is disco, right? The bass is bouncing around, but it's the root notes of the bass. I'll play on the piano first and then try to follow it.
That's great.
And I want you to compare it to the sort of somber, tense opening bits of Hello.
Okay.
Take a listen. I'm going to play the bass notes on the piano, but they're going to go by faster. So it's going to, I'm trying not to bore everybody, but here are the notes you'll hear in the bass when I play it again. All right, ready to listen to it again?
Yes.
Try to hear those bass notes,
because
that's the chords moving. What jumps out, especially as compared to the Lionel Richie tune?
I hear it like going... not down a scale, that's not the right words, but it's moving around a lot. Like, it's not just static. It is kind of jumping down and down and down. Like, it's like pulling me into a hole almost.
That whole verse doesn't repeat a single chord once.
It just like keeps pulling down, 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 down for me.
Pulling, pulling, pulling.
Pulling.
So this is what we call a circle of fifths progression. And so what that is, sometimes called a falling fifths progression.
Okay.
So if you start on A... both of these songs are in A minor. You start on A, you go down five to D, then down five from there to G, and then down five again to C, and so on. It's a pattern.
Mm-hmm.
And you remember when we did the Billie Eilish tune, Bury a Friend?
Yes.
We talked about melodic sequences.
Love it.
Da 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 da, a pattern.
Right.
This is a harmonic sequence.
Cool.
Meaning a pattern of chords. And in this case, the pattern is simple. You fall by five. So if we play it just the notes starting on A, going down five a bunch of times, sounds like this.
Whoa.
But we're running out of space, right? So what we normally do if you're writing a bass line or something is you sometimes go up and sometimes go down. So down five is the same actually as up four.
Okay.
Do you remember back from the Depeche Mode episode, what we call it when we flip an interval upside down?
No,
down five, up four is an inversion.
Okay,
right?
Well, that's easy enough. Yeah.
So the bass actually plays this, alternating, right? Down, up, down, up, down, up. And it's only the first and the last note that are the same. Everything else moves through the key in this really cool pattern. And when you give it chords... you get this.
It's beautiful. It sounds like religious to me, like church type of music. Maybe it's just the key that it's in.
I mean, I'll just say you'll find this in all sorts of music.
Yeah.
And you could totally find it in church music. This is also minor key. You can do it in a major key. You could start at a different part of the key, and I'll give you some examples. But before we bounce to a bunch of other examples of this and get back to Lionel Richie, just know that there are other sequences. This sequence is like about as simple as you go. You just go down five forever, right?
Or forever.
Down five, up four, down five, up four, right? Which is the same thing musically, just without running out of room. But there's other sequences. You could do any combination. Down five, up two, down five, up two,
so you're
right?
Just taking the circle of fifths and like bouncing around it in a pattern. And that's how you make it
so
sound cohesive.
This is a circle of fifths progression because it's endlessly going to the left on the circle chart.
Okay.
If you go to the right, people actually call it a circle of fourths because it's down a fourth.
Because you have to go up the one.
You'd be up. But don't think of the chart. The chart
I love the chart. I love the chart.
They both have the same name because they both derive from the thing. But the fact is the circle of fifths chart is just a way to learn your keys.
Yes.
This is an actual musical device, right?
Okay, cool.
The circle of fifths, you don't play the chart. The chart is not musically interesting. This is disco and 80s pop.
Arguably more interesting than the chart.
Arguably more interesting than a chart on a high school music theory class board.
Do you like to laugh, geek out on music, and learn all about that band or artist who had that one song back in the day, but then seemed to fall off the face of the earth? If so, you need to subscribe to One Hit Thunder. Together with an array of interesting and hilarious guests, we do a weekly dive into one-hit wonders like Eiffel 65's Blue, Krayshawn's Gucci Gucci, EMF's Unbelievable, Delamitri's Roll to Me, Los Del Rio's Macarena, Musical Youth's Pass the Dutchie, and even Patrick Swayze's She's Like the Wind. So are you subscribed to One Hit Thunder or what? As Desiree would say, you gotta be. And as K7 would encourage, you gotta come baby come and join in on the fun of the One Hit Thunder podcast.
Now, here, I just wanted to play another popular sequence. This one goes down four,
okay,
up a second. So like C down to G, up to A, and then down again, and you follow. This is called the Romanesca.
Okay.
And it's super popular in songs you might recognize. Does that jump out?
It's like a wedding song.
The wedding one, Canon and D, by Paco Bell.
There you go. Yes. Paco Bell's Canon.
That graduation song from the 90s, I don't remember who it's by. As we go on, we remember all the times we had together. And as our lives change from whatever, we will still be friends forever. The Green Day song? Basket Case. You got it. Basket Case by Green Day. You totally got it.
Do you have the time to listen to me whine about nothing and everything all at once? I am one of those melodramatic fools, neurotic to the bone, no doubt about it.
This is a popular sequence, and sequences are cool because they make it feel like we're moving, because your brain gets an expectation for motion.
Not enough people connect Green Day's Basket Case with Paco Bell's Canon, but I think we can do it here.
There are actually a lot of YouTube videos of people.
Really?
Or, I mean, I say YouTube, but a lot of this stuff predates YouTube. I wish I could come up with names off the top of my head, but like people segueing from one into the other and overlaying them and stuff.
Like a mashup?
A mashup of, in the same way that people do those, look at all the pop songs with the same chord progression.
Right.
It's like that, except classical music and baroque music and pop punk and stuff
and
like
Green
that.
Green Day.
That's right. Hmm. So the circle of fifths, though, is just one move. And when you put it to a beat, you get this. Okay, so you with me?
I'm like following along. Yes.
Following along.
Yes.
I guess that's the best I can hope for in this podcast. two seasons in, right? So here's one weird thing, and this is where it will get a little bit more complicated.
Oh, no.
Not all fifths are created equal.
Okay.
So if I say you're on A, go down five to D, and then go down five to G, that all makes sense.
Right.
But that's what we call a perfect fifth. Sometimes you're going to have a diminished fifth, right?
Okay.
There are different kinds of fifths. The diminished fifth, also called the tritone, because it's three whole steps.
I've heard of those
words
before.
It's like a very dissonant, clashy interval.
But why is diminished bad?
I didn't say diminished was bad. I said it was dissonant.
Oh, right.
You could hear it as bad. It's kind of an unusual striking.
Well, you said
sound.
Not all are created equal, which
not
implies
literally
that some are
not.
Than
I mean,
worse.
A perfect fifth is seven half steps, and a diminished fifth is six half steps.
Oh, because of math. Yeah.
They're not the same.
See, I put like a social science lens on it. And you're just putting like a math lens on it.
Now, good luck having a lot of music with only tritones, though.
Good luck.
Right. So let me just play an A minor scale.
Okay.
If you stop and play the distance between number six and that scale, and number two in that scale, two and six happen to be a fifth apart, you get a tritone, a diminished fifth.
Oof.
Right? So that is a little clashy. And so inevitably, when you're bouncing through the circle of fifths, eventually you're going to have a move that's not a perfect fifth. It's right. going to be the clashy tritone. And what do people do with that? How do they make it work? That's a lot of the magic of how different songs use this. And this isn't just, oh, it's minor, it's creepy. No, this happens in major too, just between four and seven. Same thing. Even major keys have tension,
right? And it's so wild because you think of minor keys as being more tense and more moody, or I do anyway.
Sure.
And to hear that same type of dissonance in a major key is surprising to me.
So major and minor are the same, just focused on different parts, right?
Of course.
So we've talked about this in the past. I think I've mentioned this, that scales and keys are asymmetrical.
Right.
They're lopsided. A major scale, for example, has a bunch of wholes and half steps. But it goes whole, whole, half, whole, 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 half. Nothing divides evenly in these scales, right? So because of that asymmetry, it lets us actually end up back at home. If it weren't for the tritone, we couldn't have this pattern. We would just keep going forever until it would be a whole 12 times before we got back to home. Listen. That's just perfect fifths and perfect fourths. No tritones. The tritone gives us our sense that we're really in a key, even though it's this kind of weird part of the key.
Can I like test my jargon for a minute?
Do it.
Like when we talk about Lydian and Mixolydian scales, are we talking about like...
Wait, what? We're not talking about Lydian.
No. But like...
Okay.
Let me ask a different way.
Yeah.
Are there any scales that exist with even intervals between?
Sure.
What
are they
called?
Scale.
A whole tone scale. They're not called anything else. It's just a whole tone scale.
So they're symmetrical scales.
Okay.
So a whole tone scale, whole steps only. A chromatic scale is half steps only.
Right.
An octatonic scale is whole step, half step, whole step, half step,
That's
whole step,
cool.
half step. Right. So there's plenty of things that are symmetrical and they could be scales and they're almost always dissonant. They are not keys. Right?
That's my next question. Is there any key that's like made up of only whole steps?
It wouldn't be a key.
It wouldn't be a key.
It would be a whole tone collection.
Okay.
You can have music in a whole tone.
That's a great band name.
Whole tone collection.
Mm-hmm.
It's a punk rock collective like Chumbawamba style.
Right.
So.
Just music teachers.
That's right. The idea of a key is that it has a tonic.
Yes.
So when we play the circle of fifths, there's going to be a part of it that has the tritone that's very tense and needs to resolve. Right there. And in I Will Survive, it happens right on the phrase, I've got all my love to give, between the six and the two chord. It's kind of a little weird shift. But remember, if we don't have that weird shift, we just go on forever. We never stop.
So I was thinking about this song, like the easy psychological like thing to map to is like obsessive stalking. Like that's the easiest place to go here. But I was wondering like if there's deeper jargon we can get into to this idea of stalking. And there is. It's called erotomania. And delusional ideation, which is the extreme end of the spectrum of erotomania. This idea that people have like delusional beliefs that people are in love with them. It's like unrequited love or unreciprocated love. And I think that that's just really interesting language to apply here. This idea that Lionel Richie is having this like erotomania towards his alleged student, maybe we're positing when we look at the music video. And like she might not be feeling that love back, but in the video you say she does. Is that like a surprise when you're watching the video?
I think
like
it's supposed to be a surprise. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's at the very end. I think the song is like done basically at that point. And someone's like, which by the way is a really odd moment. One of the other students says like, professor or whatever teach, I don't remember what he says, you have to come see. And brings him to the sculpture classroom.
And this is done like in pantomime because it's a music video.
They're talking. This is the 80s. It has this full on skit.
I love it.
The video is a solid minute, at least longer than the song.
It's like subtitles.
And he goes to the other classroom and there she is sculpting Adobe colored Lionel Richie bust out of clay. So someone brings him to it, yeah. Like they're like, hey, you have to see this. Like other people thought it was
noteworthy. Like a great redemption story, because you listen to that, like he's just like obsessed with this person and it feels so spooky and so weird. And I think that the music matches the feeling for sure. It's about this like longing and isolation, the mind's power to create connection when it isn't there. And I'm wondering, like, this is such a common theme in music. We see it all the time. Like, we mentioned a couple of other songs that have this, like, kind of possessive, stalkerish nature to them. And...
Right. Grenade, Bruno Mars.
Right.
Had that. That was very self-destructive in that one, though, right?
Yeah.
I want to do all this suffering on your behalf, even though you never asked me. Even if we put aside the music video, the song is this sort of longing, like, heartache, probably not... requited at all, right? Is someone loving you, right? All these things. Like I'd have to look at the lyrics again, but I don't think this is a functioning relationship. I think he's pining for the person.
He says, you're all I've ever wanted and my arms are wide open. This like unrequited emotional intensity to someone that might not even know that he exists, that might not even know that he's out there just kind of spinning his wheels for this other person. And I wonder how often that happens. I wonder how often people are like pining for something that the other party doesn't even have any clue towards, you know?
Folks in the audience, we're getting a glimpse into Nicole's successes romantically in her life. She's wondering if people ever pine after somebody unrequitedly.
Like,
how often does that happen? That's like,
it's like, that's it, right? That's like what always happens.
I know you weren't born married to your husband. I know that you didn't have love from afar. Maybe not as fixated as this, but probably just as fixated in middle school.
Like Jonathan Taylor Thomas, maybe.
Well,
like
okay.
JTT.
Yeah.
But not in real life.
Jonathan, come on the pod, man. We're doing guests. This is season 2.
What are you up to? Can't find him anywhere on the internet.
Whatever he wants to talk about, we will have a sidetrack about it.
Anything.
So, by the way, everybody, we got a good guest for next week. It's going to be fun.
Okay.
Spinning off on this era and
everything. It is not Jonathan Taylor Thomas.
It is not. No. Things don't move quickly enough for that. This is the internet. It's 2025. It's a fast-paced world, but not that fast-paced.
Imagine. So, he's here right now.
What do you mean... How are you like wondering if people, it's completely common for people. No, I don't know. Again, if everybody's always as fixated as the character in this song. And certainly there's not always the power dynamics as the character in the music video would have.
Yeah.
But what was the term you used for? You started off with.
Oh, it was erotomania.
Erotomania.
Yeah. Is that a funny word?
And what is that? It's basically romantic obsession.
It's like manic romantic.
Okay.
Like, so mania is like the opposite for this podcast, we can say. Like, we talked about bipolar before.
Right, we did.
And how you swing from like depression to mania, and they're like two ends of your polarity. Like, depression is really low and mania is really high.
Right.
So erotomania would be like a really obsessive, compulsive fascination with finding romance in another person. Like, hyperfixation. All you can think about is this other person.
You're saying obsessive compulsive, just like the English words?
Just the English words, not the psychological.
Okay,
not
okay,
some
yeah,
clinical,
yeah.
Right?
Right.
But this idea that you're hyperfixated on them and you can't stop thinking about them even if you want to, that you're to the point that you're following them around, you have posters all over your walls about them. All you think about is this other person. And I see that in fandom a lot, like when I talk about Jonathan Taylor Thomas or maybe... Luke Perry, which we've said in a previous episode that you don't know who that is. Dylan McKay.
I know who Luke Perry is.
Yeah, you didn't
know
who Dylan McKay was. And you took a lot of heat on the internet for that one.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah. So, but we do that a lot with stars, and it seems normal when you have a Brooke Shields poster on your wall or a Dylan McKay poster on your wall, whatever, and you like are fascinated by them. But when we do it with real people, it becomes problematic. So why? What's the difference there?
why is it less creepy to have JTT or a super hot lady on your wall?
Right.
Than like a picture of Timmy from Inga's class
right.
on your wall,
all
his yearbook
over
your
wall.
Photo. Yeah.
Right.
And I think if anybody ever, if you were dating some guy and you showed up at his house and he had a picture of you or anybody he knew on the wall, like if it's grandma, you're like, oh, it's a shrine, right? Or mm-hmm. something like that. If it's someone your age, like someone you know, then it immediately flags as creepy.
It's a big red flag. If I went into a guy I was dating's apartment and he had posters of me all over the walls,
right,
it would be weird, but it wouldn't be, it'd still be a red flag for me if he had like posters of a younger Pamela Anderson all over the walls. Like, that's not my vibe, but it would be like, okay, yeah, you're just like a male
that's
in America.
More socially acceptable though.
But
right?
Why do we like put these false idols all over our spaces?
So is it because of the normalization of false idols and consumerism, or is it a safety thing? Because like, that person is a threat to you.
Yeah.
If your pictures are all over his wall.
It's like, where'd you get a picture of me in the grocery right. store? That's weird.
It's not a threat if he's got a picture of 90s Pamela Anderson on the wall, because he presumably doesn't know her and will never meet her. But I don't know if it's just that, because also you could, because it works the other way too, where you could have a young woman with pictures of a hot actor or whatever mm-hmm. on the wall. And we don't generally think of that dynamic as being as threatening and dangerous, right? Like
yeah.
if a woman I was dating had pictures of me on the wall, it would be creepy, but less because of the obvious physical threat. Although that would probably, is she going to stab me or something?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's something about the distance in the relationship is socially acceptable, especially when combined with capitalism, maybe? I don't
and
know.
Then
you tell
think
me.
Like, where's the line for like stalker? Like, when does it cross the line from being like a super fan to a stalker?
If it's the famous person.
If it's the
because
famous person.
Because it passes
person.
It fast if it's
oh,
somebody you
super
know.
Super quick.
Like, it's already crossed that
it's
line.
Already crossed. Like if yeah. I go and you have a shrine to me and you're in your house, like you're a stalker.
This is really interesting though, because the social conventions around social media mm-hmm. have moved that line. Sorry, I'm not
yes.
answering your question
no,
about when it's across
okay.
the line
I
with
just,
a celebrity.
It's a nice conversation to have.
But in terms of having a poster of Nicole on your wall would be a red flag. But if you are a high school student now, mm-hmm. there could be a guy in your class obsessed with you, or a lady in your class obsessed with you, looking you up on Insta over and over again and just looking at your pictures
yes,
all the time.
That's which, absolutely happening.
Which is not at all as sort of telegraphed to mom and dad and your little brother
right.
as having a poster of that person on
it's
the wall.
It's more secret.
It's more secret.
Which makes it worse. But we all do it, right?
Like, but because there's no barrier that someone's going to know I'm doing this, is it worse? Because if somebody crosses the line, look, I'm not saying it's healthy for people on social media to, you know, social media stalk they're into, but putting a face of somebody on your wall, you know other people will think it's weird.
Yeah.
Right? You're doing it anyways. Whereas there is something about, well, no one will know that I'm looking Nicole up on Insta or whatever. Maybe somebody's doing that without being quite as strongly deep in their erotomania.
Right.
Did I say it right?
Yeah.
I don't know, but...
But it's all out there.
But the same, I think, actually, now that I'm thinking about it, I wonder if, just like you want to gather data on whether people pine people from afar,
yeah.
I'm wondering if, because of the internet, because a picture of 90s Pamela Anderson is mm-hmm. two clicks away mm-hmm. at any given moment, do people have stuff on their walls less often? Like, think back to, like, World War II pinup models. Like,
you don't need to.
Those pictures served a very real function for the guys overseas, right?
Gross.
They needed a picture.
Yeah.
Right? You don't need anything on the wall anymore because
it's
the internet's there.
Yeah, the internet's there. Things get weird on the internet.
So I wonder if just literal sales numbers of JTT
like
equivalent
Tiger Beat
images.
Magazine.
Tiger Beat Magazine. I don't even know.
Oh my gosh.
What's Tiger Beat Magazine?
It's like the magazine that all that came from. Like it was like a magazine, a glossy magazine.
For like girls in our age.
For anybody that's interested in pop culture, Mark.
Well, I don't know. No, I mean, you're talking about JTT.
Well, there was pictures of like Tiffany Amber Thiessen in there, too.
It was a teen thing. How do I not know that?
It was a teen thing.
I wasn't really a
teen. I don't know how you... Yeah, I wasn't really a teen. I was born a 40-year-old man.
I don't know.
But then you had these like posters that you would pull out and you could hang up the posters that came in the magazine, right? And it would be like little tidbits about, you know, Mark Paul or Tiffany Amber.
They would have their stats.
They would have their stats.
How many hit points they have.
Yeah.
How much damage they do. Is that that kind of?
I think that's why you don't know about it. Because this is how you're thinking. You were doing like tabletop games instead.
I wasn't actually. Not yet.
No?
Not yet. That
happened
later. Yeah.
Then I start, you know, I'm thinking about this like mania about identity and how we like to figure everything out about someone. And I'm wondering for you, like, how often do you Google real people that you like come across in your everyday life? Like, have you ever Googled a student or Googled a prospective faculty candidate or...
I think HR regulations say I'm not supposed to.
Oh, really?
But professional contacts, I'm Googling people all the time.
Right.
Like, if I meet someone at a conference or I meet someone at a show that is a musician, I will look them up to hear what they're doing. If sometimes a student will come in, you know, they released the EP, I'll go on Spotify or whatever and listen to it, right? Random people that I know, I don't really that much.
What about strangers that you see in the world? Do you think...
So I'm just going to Google like brown haired guy on the corner of Watervale Avenue? Like, what do you mean? How would I look him up?
If you were riding the subway and you saw someone on the subway, you could find that person online just by like looking at their appearance. Do you think you could hunt them out?
Like online? I could use a reverse image search, right?
Yeah, I give that as an assignment sometimes.
I think that's the only way I would know how to do it.
Like you can say, okay, this girl on the train has a sweater on from a college and she has like a sports symbol on that sweater. So, you know, maybe she plays hockey for that school and maybe I can look up pictures of the hockey team and find her and find her name and then find her socials. I give that an assignment sometimes when we're talking about like projection and identity, and students can always find them.
Wow, that's crazy to me.
And like you or me might not be able to, but they can. They like know where to look. And in one...
The dark web.
I was giving a lecture on Carl Jung, who is one of my favorite psychologists that talks about as one does. We talked about him like the shadow self before and their identity of the self and self theories of
collective,
the self.
Collective unconsciousness. Yeah.
Yes. And my students were so freaking bored. They were like falling asleep. You know, it's hard to believe. So I said, okay, let's just like take a break. Let's take like a screen break for a minute. But on your phones, I just want you to find out any creepy bits of information you can find out about Carl Jung. Like find who can get me the biggest gossip about this guy. And all of a sudden they all perked up and they were just like beep, bop, booping on their devices. And we made this crazy list on the board of all the weird stuff Carl Jung has done.
Wow.
And it was a really great exercise in this idea of like this mania, this like obsessive need to find like little bits of gossip about somebody.
God, or like, can you find the most handsome picture of Carl on the internet?
That's what we were doing.
From 100 years ago. Wow.
Yeah. And like they found it. And then,
The sweet spot with our episodes is always when there's just the tiniest shred of connection between the musical concept.
Do you think that this is happening today?
I don't think this is happening. This strikes me as just interesting about this song.
Yeah, it's interesting about
this
song.
That's interesting.
I can make some connections. We're talking about how...
Chord patterns and stuff.
Chord patterns and how we're feeling kind of stuck in some of the chord patterns here, or at least I was. Like, either I need to be jarred by it, being like, oh, I'm getting in too deep of finding this information about the stranger on the internet, or like something from the external world, like, kind of snaps me back into reality. This like flow state you get into, or I do anyway, when I'm like going down a rabbit hole trying to figure someone out or figure something out. Yeah.
So, like, you're saying, kind of like, we have this chord pattern and it's a fixation, and the tritone helps us like make it healthy, kind of.
Or at least like
Gives us a way out
or offers some like,
I like it.
This is why I'm doing this for an assignment, not just because it's like salacious and creepy to do that on the subway. Or I'm doing this because my teacher told me to, or to learn more about this prospective student or employee or something.
Yeah, I like
that.
You like
justify it.
Mm-hmm.
listeners and you may have mentioned, we've basically not said a word about Hello, the music, since the very beginning. We've been just on I Will Survive.
Yes.
Let's get back there.
I'd love to.
Because the whole thing I just got to is that every song uses the tritone in this progression, the dissonance, differently. So here's a few more examples of how songs do this, and then let's end on what Lionel Richie does. Okay, so here's first example, You Never Give Me Your Money, The Beatles, 1969. This one's on major. The tritone, again, in major is between 4 and 7. When they say the words, middle of negotiations.
You never give me your money. You only give me your funny paper. And
here,
in the middle of negotiations, you break down.
Right, like if it stopped in the middle of that phrase, you'd be left hanging.
Be kind of tense, huh?
Right.
Mr. Sandman, The Cordettes, 1954. Okay. This one starts on a major 7 chord. Not a major 7 chord. A major 7 chord. Numbers are confusing. In major, this is a weird one. But because they give us that weird chord, they never go to the tritone.
Okay.
Because they go out of key for the first chord, they avoid the tritone completely. They do 5 laps along our circle, but never have to do that dissonance between 4 and 7.
Mr. Sandman, bring me a dream.
Bum, 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 bum.
Make him the cutest that I've ever seen.
Bum, 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 bum.
Give him 2 lips like roses and clover.
Bum, 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 bum.
Then tell him that his lonesome nights are over.
And that song has like a real kind of creepy undertone to it.
Pretty weird.
I think it's because of from Back to the Future. I think that's the song that plays when he lands in the past in Back to the Future 1.
I think
and he like
so.
Goes
think
into the
you,
diner
right,
or something
yeah.
and he's like, where am I? Maybe I'm just making
I think there's something odd about that song.
Yeah.
I actually really like it, but
I like it.
It's got a warmth to it, but also kind of an unsettling.
Like Creepy Dolls could be singing it and it would work.
Their voices like sound almost too good together. Like it's a little ethereal.
It's like it feels more complex than it needs to, but it still sounds good. Maybe because the sevens.
So remember how I said things, if you don't have the tritone, they just never end.
Yeah.
And Mr. Sandman does it by just changing one of the chords. The Strokes, the song 15 Minutes, 2005, they just keep doing perfect fifths. They go all the way a full 12. And just say, screw it, we're just going way out of key and getting lost. Oh, and they're literally counting as they go. Major chords.
I appreciate the academic quality of that song. And that's about all I got.
It's one of those instructional songs.
Yeah, I
like
that.
You can learn the circle.
Yeah.
But it's pretty disorienting, right?
I don't
You never
like
know when it's
going
to end.
Yeah, it's not for me. I mean, come at me, but I don't really like The Strokes that much. I need to listen more.
Oh, I love The Strokes. That is a little disconcerting. I think it's supposed to be. It's disorienting.
I think if I saw them live, I would really like it. I think I need to like be jumping around.
So, few more examples before we eventually maybe get back to Lionel Richie. A lot of times people use only part of it. They use a small subset of the circle of fifths to get a lot of the vibe and the motion of it without having to worry about the tritone.
Lazy.
So Jonas Brothers, Sucker, 2019, goes 1, 4, 7, 3, 6, but then it breaks the pattern before having to jump to the tritone.
I'm a sucker for you.
Yeah.
People definitely had posters of them on their wall.
I bet. Yeah. I'm sure they still do.
Some people, you not think? Me.
They're still grown-ups now.
They're like grown-ups.
We're like a little old.
I'm a little bit too old to follow.
We might have been close
Brothers.
To their age, but not close to their demographics.
I do like. There's one that I like more than the others.
You're on notice, Jonas Brother. One of the three of you, they like the
one.
Other two. They
it was the one
she
that's
doesn't
like brooding and kind of broken because I could like fix him.
You're asking the wrong guy. I don't know.
There was sorry. I have more about the Jonas Brothers. But.
Let's come back to that maybe.
Okay, maybe.
Million years ago, Adele, 2015. This one does four laps through the circle. Also a melodic sequence, just like Billie Eilish.
Nice.
I know.
It's kind of pretty. What? No, I'm just kidding.
You can hear the pattern there, right?
You can
it feels
for sure.
Like a pattern, I think, because she's got a melody sequence too.
For sure. And that for me, it just, I really respond to that type of music because it's so obtuse. Like, this is a clear pattern. Like, yeah. I can clearly hear it. Sucker, like, you can kind of hear it.
It goes by so fast in Sucker.
Yeah, but this is just like, it's so kind of on the nose that it really reinforces the point you're trying to make. So it's a great example.
Last example.
Okay.
Partial harmonic sequence. This Love, Maroon 5, 2002, starts on 5. 5, 1, 4, 7. We do get the tritone. They did only four of them in a row, and they go out of their way to give us the tritone. Take a listen.
I was so high, I did not recognize the fire burning in her eyes, the chaos that controlled my mind.
He was accused of having this delusional ideation. Adam Levine, he was like texting someone that wasn't his wife. Scandalous text messages.
Was he too into Circle of Fifths progressions?
It was like
fixating?
So weirdly about Circle of Fifths progression. And she was like, guy, I'm not into it. And he was like, no, but really, this is an important piece.
So the people have been waiting long enough. You know where we're going. There's a Circle of Fifths progression here. We just want to see what he does with the tritone, right? He's got a unique thing. Let's play that chorus one more time.
I can see it in your eyes. I can see it in your smile. You're all I've ever wanted. And my arms are open wide. Cause you know just what to say.
It's a full circle.
Yeah, and it's like really clear.
You know why it's clear?
Because he just explained it so well to me.
I wish. Because just like Adele, it has a melodic sequence. Da 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 da. It's not full. It the harmonic sequence goes for the entire circle, but three times in a row he gives us a melody that is essentially the same pattern repeated.
I think for me I need it to be in the melody. I think that's the only way I can understand.
Well, there it is.
Thank you.
Because like I Will Survive is much more free melodically. This is more simple,
and
I
can't hear all the details, but when it's in the melody, it's like so crystal clear and like I said, so obtuse, and I love it.
So what's the deal with this one? So this should be, if we're just staying within the key of A minor, our tritone would be like this. But what we get here is this. Hear that one? So they flat the wrong note. Instead of going F to B, and that being a tritone, they go F to B flat, making it a totally clean, perfect fourth. But that perfect fourth is super weird.
Because
B flat is out of the key.
Because you want it to be a tritone because that's what you're used to hearing.
Right.
Creates a dissonance when there wouldn't be a dissonance normally, but in context,
it's flat
there.
Two chord.
I'm a genius.
They take the tritone like this and make it a perfect fourth, lowering it.
You're all I've
right here.
Wanted.
So it's a less dissonant chord, but at a weird place in the key that feels weird, right?
For sure.
And then it's the last chord then that is the tritone, right? The tritone's not gone. It's just been shifted or whatever.
Right.
Whatever.
So, and that's how you find resolution, because then you hear the tritone and that's what you've been waiting for the whole time. Just
exactly.
Like he's waiting for the sculpturist face.
Now, that's right. And why am I obsessing so much about, why am I fixating so much manically on this tritone? It's because this is a very boring chord progression. But all of the, including this song, what did I give you? 8 examples of it being used. None of them use it the same way.
That's They're interesting. All,
the tritone is not the only way that they adjust it. Sometimes you just start at a different point. But you take this really boring pattern that gives you a lot of motion and you say, okay, I want that motion, but I don't want it to be boring. So let's make tweaks.
Yeah.
And the tritone and where it is a part of what keeps this moment so interesting.
I have a fun question.
Yeah.
So when you think of people that you might have been like borderline unhealthily obsessed with as a preteen,
sure.
Right? Yeah. And maybe it's not a pop culture thing, but who, if you had posters plastering your bedroom walls as like 13-year-old Mark, who was on those posters?
Do you want a very not fun? Do you want a
like real?
If you want the true answer, that's not fun.
Yeah.
And hey, everybody, my birthday is in October.
Cool.
Congratulations.
Yay, Mark.
This episode maybe is coming out in October, actually. Uh-huh. I was young for my grade,
yeah,
so to speak.
Okay.
Back in San Diego in the 80s, it was the wild, wild west. You didn't, like, have to put your kid in. Like, in modern New England,
like 6 in September.
I would be too young to be put in. I was 4 when I started kindergarten.
What? That's too young.
And there were people in my class who were literally in... over a year older than me.
Yeah.
It was just sort of the wild, wild west. Oh, put them in whenever they feel like it.
That's...
I somehow did okay.
When did you graduate high school? When you were like 17, 16?
I was 17. Wow. I can remember being in the Bay Area, going to comedy, 18 and up comedy clubs, acting like I had forgotten my ID and growing out my stubble because I could. And look, going to the bouncer at the comedy club and being like, this is the first month of college before I was 18. Going,
right.
Come on, these guys would not be hanging out with a high school student. And they'd be like, yeah, yeah, yeah. Because I looked old because of the stubble. Because I was college student at 17
wow.
for like a month, right?
Okay.
So why am I talking
so
about
that
all this?
Said.
I had a weird thing when I was a kid, intimidation about being younger than,
yeah,
about being
sense.
Younger than everybody else, right? And as my nascent romantic feelings like sparked, it was never for people older than me.
Okay.
It wasn't until a few years later that I would even be like, oh, that supermodel's hot. Like,
right.
My obviously I knew they were hot. When I was 13 or whatever, or preteen, I did not fixate on anybody like the adults. They were just like, oh my God, they're too old. So that's my long way of legitimately telling
I'm
you.
I'm so curious.
Nobody. That
nobody.
Changed eventually. But like there wasn't anybody. There were people in my class or whatever.
That you had pictures up on your
wall. No pictures on the wall.
Okay,
no,
sure.
No Polaroids at my middle school. But
you
it
didn't
was.
Broadcast
I look
at
back.
Home.
This is all me retrospectively. Mm. This is probably TMI for the listeners. But like, I didn't really fixate on like people would have a, who would it be? Like one of the girls from Saved by the Bell or whatever on their binder or whatever.
Like Stacey Carosi.
Which one's Stacey Carosi?
She's Leah Remini's character in the Malibu Sands episodes. It was a brief like summer episode.
I don't remember any of this stuff.
And Zach Morris had like a summer fling with her. And she was like 25 when they filmed, but he was only 17.
Oh, wow.
I just listened to a great podcast called Zach Morris is Trash that Mark Paul Gosselaar goes back and watches all the Saved by the Bell episodes.
Wow.
And talks about how it's like so problematic, like everything
oh
about
my gosh.
It. And
sure.
She was a guest on it and they were talking a lot about like, how come we never dated? And he's like, because I was 17 and you were 25 and that's weird.
Wow.
So maybe that's like kind of the vibe you're talking
I
about.
I had that kind of vibe.
More Stacey Carosi.
Until I was probably like, honestly, like a grown up.
Wow.
Like, and that doesn't mean I didn't find people attractive or whatever out in the world. But like the people that were in their 20s that would have been the high schooler going, wow, that's the hottest person I've ever seen. My brain was like,
I'm a baby.
Too insecure.
Yeah.
To like go. Isn't that weird?
How is your wife older than you?
My wife is older than me.
How about how much?
A few months.
Okay, well, that doesn't prove
no,
our
but
point.
This, seriously, though?
Yeah.
When I was like 15, it would have been a problem.
Yeah.
When I was 13, it would have been a problem. All of my high school girlfriends were younger than me. What's your answer then?
I've already said Luke Perry.
Luke Perry.
Mark Paul Gosselaar.
Yeah.
Sometimes AC Slater, which is Mario Lopez.
Yeah, yeah. That one I knew.
Yeah, very good. I wasn't really into musicians. Jonathan Taylor Thomas, for sure. JTT. And I think that's it. As a later adolescent, now I'm too old to have had Bieber fever and had it be like appropriate.
Sure. You were in the 20s.
But
yeah.
Right now, like I kind of have Bieber fever. Like I feel like.
He's a handsome 30-something.
And he's like broken and I can fix him. And that's kind of what I'm interested in, you know?
What's your birth month?
August.
So you were old, or you were also young?
I'm young.
But also you were a girl, and there's less like social
schema.
There's like social
around.
Schemas that means the guy should be older that I had bouncing in my head.
Especially in the 80s, like when we grew up. Yeah, like okay. Now we're trying to move away from stuff like that, but yeah.
I don't know. Is this something to leave in or no? It's weird, isn't it?
It's kind of weird, but this is what the people want. Nevermind the Music is hosted by Nicole Batcher and hosted and produced by Mark Poppany. You can email us at nevermusicpod@gmail.com and give us a follow on social media. Nevermind the Music is also part of the Lorehounds Network. Please join the conversation on their Discord server. Thanks for listening.